It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And you can dial our local numbers, too, 247-7282 in Carteret, Craven, and Pamlico County, and 353-4674 in Onslow County. And joining us this morning, Wes is in the court, or doing his legal work as well. So Cecil Harvell is with us. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing all right.
Good. Good. Very good. Thought today, Ben, we would discuss the powers of the fiduciary. Now, fiduciary, as we've talked about on the program, can mean under a power of attorney, under an agency agreement. It can be the trustee. It can be the executor. Fiduciary basically is a catch-all, if you will, for someone who is responsible for another's affairs and is held to, you know, a reasonable person standard. They are the person who is making decisions on behalf of another.
So it's not just the money, but it is largely that.
Right? Largely that. But as to, and this is, again, what the program will be about today, but let's talk for a moment about the health care proxy, or in North Carolina, many times called the health care power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
There, of course, The agent under the power of attorney is making decisions about consent to surgery, consent to diagnostic proceedings, consent to any kind of medical necessity.
Right, right.
And the other thing that is a power within the health care power of attorney is a medical release.
Mm-hmm.
To the agent so that they are able to get access to the medical records of their parent.
Right, it's the HIPAA release.
Of course, this is just critical. I mean, this the time in which we live right now with mm-hmm. the laws being as strict as they are, and procedures being what they are with companies and hospitals and laboratories and doctor's offices, they really are not able to release these documents even to the spouse.
Mm.
So a husband has a difficult time getting the medical records of his wife or vice versa. And certainly a child or a grandchild or a brother or a sister is going to get the door shut without the executed copy of a valid health care
right.
power of attorney.
Exactly. So again, these are we're talking about here is that responsibilities of that person who has been entrusted with this now.
Well, what I really want to talk about and is how important it is that the powers of these fiduciaries are very specifically enumerized and stated in the document. Now, more specifically, let's talk now about the financial power of attorney, or mm-hmm. just the durable power of attorney. So many times, Wes and I are seeing, Ben, a power of attorney that is very general in nature. Maybe even, unfortunately, what we lawyers know to be the short form power of attorney, where just certain items are generically initialed. This power of attorney now, we are finding more and more to be insufficient or to be inadequate mm-hmm. as to the power to make transfers to trust, revocable or irrevocable trust,
right.
The power to make elder law decisions, Medicaid planning decisions for our loved one, for instance, like the statement of intent to return home,
mm-hmm.
which we've talked about here on this program before, for folks who are potentially applying for Medicaid benefits,
mm-hmm.
the power to make gifts to the family for tax purposes or for other kinds of purposes, the gifting authority is one that is extremely specific, and the North Carolina General Statutes give much guidance to exactly what the power of attorney can say and what it means if it doesn't give specific kinds of power about gifting.
Right.
Gifting is very important, Ben, in the estate planning arena, the elder law arena. And again, the power of attorney needs to be specially drafted to address exactly the fact that, for instance, that the agent under the document, the mm-hmm. fiduciary, has the authority to make a gift to themselves. Maybe they are one of three children.
Right, right.
Okay, they're the elder son in the family, and so therefore they're the fiduciary under the power of attorney. But can they, and there's a plan of action for there to be gifting. But the power of attorney needs to say that it's not a conflict of interest, if you will. That's not the wording in the power of attorney,
right.
But I'm trying to explain it so that our listeners understand that this is not a conflict of interest for the fiduciary to make a gift to he and his brothers and sisters and he be included in the gifting.
Right. Right. Because that's part of a plan.
That's part of a plan.
Right. And
that's
he just happens to be the one who's executing
right.
the plan.
It's part of a strategy.
Okay.
And so there is language that can be specifically incorporated into this document so that this is a permissible transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you really do have a problem.
I would think part of the reason for you want to be specific is also to rule out what the fiduciary cannot do.
There's a lot of truth to that, as well as what record keeping there to keep, and who has access to the transaction history of the fiduciary. Many times, our powers of attorney mention that there are to be accurate records kept as to the transaction history, and that this record keeping is available to other members of the family on an annual basis so as to allow the power, so as to give other members of the family some window of opportunity to really review and see exactly what is being done on behalf of their loved one, even though they are not necessarily the fiduciary.
Yeah, here's an example. I know it came up, somebody was telling me that, well, you know, Mom had promised that she was going to sell or offer me this property before she sold it out on the open market, you know. And then she gets sick, and now this other person is the fiduciary here, and he wants to go ahead and sell the property,
right?
But she promised that I'd have the first crack at it,
right?
First price,
right?
Well, that could be written into a. Something like that could be written into a power of attorney?
It could be. It could be. And again, that would be, for instance, the right, the power, the obligation to honor any previous commitments or promises on behalf of the principal. And your factual example is the promise that, or commitment that the principal, who is the drafter of the signer of the power of attorney, you know, has made, and that therefore the agent, the fiduciary, is to honor these commitments and promises and things of that nature.
You know, these are so much more important now as we see people living longer, and of course living longer, that means they also have more dementia issues as well. And so this kind of specificity, I would imagine, is crucial now.
It really is. It's critical. And let's talk about this twist and turn. So many times, folks are registering their son or daughter, on their bank account or on their stock account even, because they think that they need to have their son or daughter on the account so that they have access to the account. This is just an everyday thing that I see, Ben. And that is not necessary if there is a well-drafted, again, power of attorney. Because the power of attorney is going to give the son or daughter access to the account. It's going to give them the right to pay bills, to file tax returns, to honor any commitments or liabilities on behalf of their loved one. And again, most importantly, just general access to not only information, but also access to be able to get to the account and to be able to use it for the benefit of the principal or for their loved one. And so it really is not necessary that the mother, father, granddad, grandfather, grandmother go out and register their loved one, their son, daughter, granddaughter on the account and add them to the account. We've talked about that here on the program before, that, you know, that creates ownership in the account.
Right.
on behalf of the son or daughter.
We'll have more to come in just a moment here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Cecil Harvell with us this morning, and you can call in as well. You can also reach them online at harvellandcollins.com and at 726-9050. That's at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City to call for that appointment. Go online at harvellandcollins.com for past shows and other information. Hey, welcome back to our program. We're talking about some crucial documents and the need to be specific about those here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell with us.
Of course, you know, Ben, we lawyers are constantly asked, you know, gosh, why does this document have to be, you know, 5 or 6, 7 pages just to give my son or daughter the right to be my agent, to be my power of attorney? Why is it so lengthy? And of course, again, it's because of the need for great specificity as to these powers. And these powers, again, I want to emphasize, are in ever so slightly different form, but in each and every kind of document that we do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, they are in a trust agreement, the powers of the trustee. They are in a power of attorney, the powers of the agent or the attorney in fact. They are in a health care power of attorney. Mm-hmm. They're in a will as to the power of the executor.
Mm-hmm.
So these powers are incorporated into any number of types of documents. And again, in each and every one, it must be looked at and analyzed as to exactly, you know, are they specific enough? In the trust, for instance, does the trustee have the authority to waive the requirement of having to make annual accountings with the court?
Mm-hmm.
Does the trustee have to qualify before the court and post a bond? Or are we just talking about a privately funded trust,
mm-hmm,
whereby the son or daughter acts as the trustee, or even the husband or wife for a surviving spouse,
right,
acts as a trustee, and that all filings with the court are waived?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, in a situation between a husband and wife, or between a grantor and their child, more than likely the intention is that there not have to be an annual accounting.
It's a public record
with the court,
right,
that they're not that we not have to go to that that effort each, mm-hmm, and every year, much as you have to do in, say, a guardianship.
Right. Okay.
But that requirement must be set forth specifically in the
mm-hmm,
the document.
Mm-hmm.
So the devil is in the details.
Indeed.
With each and every one of these documents. And with each and every specific power.
What are some of the pitfalls if they're not specified?
Well, with regard to accountings in a trust, the pitfall is that now we're in a situation where the trustee has to qualify as trustee,
mm-hmm,
get letters of trusteeship with the court, and then file an annual accounting each, mm-hmm, and every year. That's very burdensome. And if we're talking about a trust that's going to exist for a long period of time, then, you know, it's extraordinarily burdensome. As to a power of attorney,
mm-hmm,
a financial power of attorney, if it doesn't have this gifting language in it that we spoke about, we may very likely be in a situation where we're unable to do sound, reasonable Medicaid planning for the client.
Right, right.
We talked so much on this program about elder law and about making transfers so as to protect assets. Well, the language in the power of attorney has to be specific in order to allow the son or daughter to make transfers for prudent purposes and for planning purposes in order to protect those assets.
Does the language in power of attorney, for example, you may have other examples, does it have to be specific as to its term, as to when it starts, when it ends, or?
That's a great question. All of these documents, the durable power of attorney, the health care power of attorney, and of course the last will and testament, they can be revoked and they can be modified as long as the principal, of course, is competent to do,
mm-hmm,
so.
Right.
So their life, if you will, is as they are active, they are in force as long as they are signed and executed, and as long as the principal has not revoked them.
Mm-hmm. Now, does that have to be recorded with the court?
they do the durable power of attorney is recorded with the court when it becomes necessary for the agent to start acting under the power of attorney. And the purpose of this is to give third-party notice, since the document is now recorded, that son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter are in fact now acting for their loved one. And that is when we record the document. The documents are prepared during the planning phase and are then kept in an important place and are not necessarily recorded, Ben, during the planning phase because, again, they're changeable, they're revocable, they're modifiable, and we really aren't needing them right now. I mean, you have a power of attorney, I have a power of attorney, but as of right now, on this day, thank goodness, we're able to make our own decisions.
Right.
But you still have to have the document in a safe place so that if we were in an accident or if we were to have a sudden illness, then our loved one would be able to come in and get that document and then record it with the Register of Deeds and begin to act pursuant to the document.
Okay. Again, we're asking the questions, and you can ask them as well at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674, and online at harvellandcollins.com, where you can find lots of great information there, too. So as we get specific about these elements of these various documents, are we asking the fiduciary, the person who's going to absorb this power, I mean, do they... do they have an opportunity to say, well, I think that's wrong, or that's, I should not be the one, or maybe that's too more specific than, or not specific enough, or?
In terms of accepting the responsibility, many times that's been discussed ahead of time. They know that they're the one, they're the chosen one. It's probably good to let your child, if you know which, if you have three or four children or even two, to let them know which child is going to be the agent under these documents, so that if for some reason they absolutely are not going to serve, then we can get that corrected on the front end. I actually had a file like that very recently, Ben. These were the facts. This particular client has an issue in her life that just is not going to get corrected. It has to do with kind of a defunct corporation. The problem is that the corporation owns title to land. And in order to get the corporation back in good standing, it is going to be just an act of Congress, if you will. Okay.
Right.
And the land is not that valuable. And so the child was concerned about being the fiduciary, being the agent under the power of attorney, being the executor under the will, because he was wondering, well, will it not be my obligation if I'm the fiduciary to see to the clearing of this corporation, the act of Congress? Am I not going to need to take that on? Isn't that my responsibility?
Right. Good question.
And it's a great question. Yeah. And it's a very wise client asking this question. And the answer is absolutely you will, unfortunately, potentially be required to move through this act of Congress. Okay. Now, one could take the position that you think that it's within your fiduciary rights to decide that that's not necessary or not cost effective, but someone might challenge that in the family. And there are, in this particular family, which is why this was coming up, there is some conflict. So,
imagine that.
Yeah.
Family
so,
and conflict.
That's a great one to explain to our listeners. And so actually this client on the front end has said, look, I'm just not going to put myself in this position. I understand why this corporation is defunct. I understand the value of the land that it owns. And I just simply am not going to take on that responsibility. So please take me out of the documents and put in, you know, a different member of the family who, if they want to take on this monumental task,
right,
then I'll allow them to do it. But I don't want to have the responsibility to do that.
All right. We have more to come in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, again on the web at harvellandcollins.com. Again, we're talking about estate planning, and especially in terms of the fiduciary, with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. And Cecil, we all come back to the planning stages, don't we, eventually?
Well, we do. And a nice discussion with your family, a review of these documents with your lawyer, at least every 5 years, 7 years at the max, you should take these documents out, dust them off, look at them, make sure that they are still, that the appointees are as you want them to be. And of course, Ben, there are changes in these documents. We are routinely modifying, adjusting, ever so slightly molding our durable power of attorney based on the case law in the state of North mm-hmm. Carolina. Not only the case law as to financial matters, but case law as to elder law issues, Medicaid planning, Social Security issues, tax issues. And when cases come down that address the responsibilities of fiduciary, we many times then will modify the paragraphs mm-hmm. that are applicable to that in our document. So our power of attorney probably changes at least once a year, maybe even a couple of times a year. We will read something where we think we need to tighten up the language a little bit. So what I'm saying is, and the same with the powers of the executor,
right,
in a
mm-hmm.
will.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that these powers are definitely fluid,
mm-hmm.
Depending on case law in the state of North Carolina, a change of statutory, a change in the statutes, and therefore, you know, the document many times has to be updated. It's not that the older document is invalid,
right,
or is null and void or anything of that dramatic nature. It's just that you do want these powers to be the latest and greatest.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, those updates are, and we have changes, as you said, changes in the law. There's also certainly changes in estate planning.
Yes.
So you have to look uh-huh. at. So all of those things play into the role of getting it, not only getting it updated, but also beginning that step. If you haven't begun that step yet, you got to go ahead and get started.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. And you can get started by talking to the folks at Harvell and Collins, too, at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and go online, too, at harvellandcollins.com. And in that first appointment, you'll cover a lot of this ground, right?
We do. We go through this information. We solicit the facts,
mm-hmm.
usually within about 30, 45 minutes. We know kind of where we are heading with mm-hmm. this file. We're able then to make a quote, a fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then the burden shifts, if you will, to the client. They make a decision. Do we want you to proceed? Or do we want to pause for a while? Do we want to talk with a different lawyer and see what another opinion might be? All right. of those things are within the rights and powers, the right of the client. And then, so, you know, really there's nothing to lose.
Right, exactly.
By taking the time and coming in and laying out your facts and seeing what recommendations might be made.
But that journey begins with that first step, and that first step is a call on the folks at Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, again, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050.